Welcome to a web-exclusive election special from Radio Catskill. I'm Jason Dolt. And coming up, we have all of the full speeches from candidates who spoke at the rally for New York 19th Congressional District candidate Josh Riley on Wednesday, November 2nd, 2022, including former President Bill Clinton. This rally took place at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center in Hurleyville. It was a fairly packed room. Lots of people were there. Lots of energy, too. Coming up, we'll have the full speeches from each of the candidates who were on hand, including Sullivan County District Attorney Megan Galligan, New York State Assemblywoman Aileen Gunther, candidate Josh Riley for New York's 19th Congressional District, and former President Bill Clinton. First, I have a couple quick conversations with some of the attendees. There was a good showing from labor organizations.
Hi, my name is Erica Callender, and we represent the 1199 SEIU healthcare union, one of the largest healthcare unions in the United States, over 450,000 members. We were just having a conversation with some of our union brothers and sisters about the cost of living. People can't afford to live anymore. Most people that work in the healthcare industry have maybe two jobs, two and a half jobs sometimes, to keep their families afloat. They can't afford rents anymore. They can't afford anything. So we need people in office who's going to help working families, who's going to ensure that we have cost of living increases every year, support unions, support union families and working families. Everything else is fluff. You know, we can work with everything else. But just keeping food on the table for families is my biggest concern.
My name is Nina Geis. I'm a unit coordinator at Garnet Health Hospital, and I actually live right here in Hurleyville. I guess I'm looking for someone who's going to represent what's best for the most people, allowing people to have freedom over their bodies, allowing people to be able to feed their families and still have time to spend with their families.
You're living here in Hurleyville. What did you think when you heard like a former president's coming to Hurleyville?
I thought that was very cool. It's pretty far up here. We don't usually get stuff like that.
Thanks for talking.
Thank you.
One of the first speakers was Ann Hart, who is the chair for the Sullivan County Democratic Committee. She's not one of the candidates. She's the chair of the committee. So we have an excerpt of her remarks, and then we'll get into the full speeches from each of the candidates who were on hand.
I want to thank all of you for coming, but I really would be remiss if I did not acknowledge our fellow chairs in both our congressional district and also in our judicial district. So please stand up, guys. I don't know where you're sitting, but stand up because you're doing the hard work, and I know you are. This is a really historic year for so many reasons. And one of those reasons is there are so many women on the ticket, up and down. It's incredible. This summer, I was honored to attend a convention during which three fabulous women attorneys were selected to be our candidates, our three candidates for state Supreme Court. And they're all here today. Stand up, please. Vote for all three. And don't forget, vote for all three. There's one opponent on the other line, and we don't want him on the bench. He's a bad guy. They're good. So I don't really have a speech. You're not here to hear from me, and I'm going to introduce our district attorney, Megan Galligan, and candidate for state Supreme Court.
Thank you, everyone, so much. I want to thank Anne for her remarks and lovely introduction. Assemblywoman Aileen Gunther is here. Of course, Josh Riley is here. And you may have heard of him, President Bill Clinton will be here in a few. There are a lot of lawyers in the room, and when the president gets here, there'll be one more. Only two have ever studied at Georgetown, so Josh, President Clinton and I offer you condolences. You only made it to Harvard. It's an honor to be here as a proud member of the Sullivan County community. This is a moment of significance for us as we welcome a leader whose vision for America brought together people from across all walks of life in pursuit of a better tomorrow. As we pause to reflect on how far we've come and to recognize how far we can go, his lessons should echo along our path forward. I grew up right here in Sullivan County, a place that has seen the very highest moments of the Borscht Belt era, and the same place that has suffered through so many trying times. Through it all, we've proven that our greatest asset is our people, and that the people of Sullivan County believe in truth, justice, and the American way. We believe in truth because the truth matters. We believe in the truths our forefathers so eloquently wove into the fabric of our union. We believe in the American freedoms of speech, association, assembly, and press. And we believe those rights apply equally to each and every one of us, regardless of race, religion, or gender. We believe that respect for our Constitution is more critical to the future successes of our country than any of our individual accomplishments might be. We know that respect that a true patriot has for the rule of law transcends power and political affiliation. The rule of law in America guarantees equal access for each of us to legal challenges. And we know that when those have been exhausted, we are duty-bound as American citizens to accept the result. Of democracy as we know it depends on it. We believe in justice because we know that due process and accountability ensure that the rules apply to everyone and that we're all held to the same standard. Now, Josh, the president, and I may not have gone to law school together, but each of us is deeply connected to our criminal justice community. Josh and I know well that we're in the company today of a president whose agenda included support for comprehensive justice initiatives, a president who funded our police, and who brought about the longest ever decline in our national crime rate. For 8 consecutive years in a row, under the leadership of President Bill Clinton, our nation became a safer place to live, work, and raise our families. That's what we can do when we work together with common sense to offer help to those who need it and to make sure our neighborhoods are the kind of places we can be proud to be from. I'm proud to be from Sullivan County. And I want to thank President Clinton for setting the standard for effective and responsible justice in America. We also believe in the American way, and that's why in Sullivan County we come together. We come together to celebrate our victories and to overcome our challenges. I was honored when Sullivan County came together in 2020 to celebrate the victory that made me the first woman ever elected district attorney in our county. But there was more coming together to do. Together with all of you, we brought people from all walks of life to the table to address the opiate crisis head on. We created a table big enough to hold every voice and small enough for everyone to be heard. At those tables across the towns, villages, and hamlets of our community, we tapped into our collective intelligence. We brought hope, not handcuffs, to Sullivan County with resounding and unanimous support from our law enforcement community. We opened a medication-assisted treatment facility in the basement of the district attorney's office. We traveled from Bloomingburg to Roscoe and Grahamsville to Berryville, training people to save lives with naloxone. While that's how far we've come, we're still going. We're taking on the maternal child health crisis, and we're going to battle for those who battle mental illness. Now more than ever, we need people in positions of leadership who want a seat at our table in Sullivan County. We need people who want to meet us where we are and who want to focus on what brings us together rather than what divides us. I'm very proud that Assemblywoman Gunther has taken her seat at our table and been a motivating force for positive change, delivering on the promise she has made to us. And I'm proud to be in the company of Josh Riley, who has put himself on the line to demand truth, advocate for justice, and live by the values of American citizenship that so many have seemed to forget. It's time now to look toward the future with cautious and hopeful optimism, to set aside politics and find within ourselves and each other that which unites us, and to demonstrate for our children by thought, word, and deed, appreciation for our Constitution, that Constitution which guarantees each of us the right to pursue our own vision of liberty and happiness. But there's also urgency in this moment, for as far as we have come, we have to go. It's an honor to stand among those of us gathered today as we demand from our government that which we demand from ourselves and each other: responsibility, civility, and integrity. It's my privilege now to introduce to you a partner of the Drug Task Force, my neighbor and my friend, Assemblywoman Aileen Gunther.
Start reading what I have to say about our great candidate. I just want to say thank you to Sullivan County, to Orange County, for allowing me to do something that I really love to do. You know, as a nurse, I served our constituency around Sullivan County and Orange County, and this job allowed me to do the same thing, but just a little bit more. So thank you, thank you, thank you. To be here with all of you. I'm extremely excited to be in the company of President Bill Clinton today. Whoa! Something I thought never would happen. As I stand here today, I can't emphasize enough the importance of this election. I am really scared. I am scared for the future of my five granddaughters and the rights they may have stripped away from them as a result of the decisions being made today. We all need to fight like hell for the candidates that will stand up and protect our rights, our democracy, and our voice in government. As a registered nurse, I am always excited to come out and support candidates that fight for our health care. Josh Riley, I repeat, Josh Riley is just that candidate. And we all need to do everything we can to ensure that Josh Riley is elected. Women's rights, healthcare are certainly on the ballot this year. I and all the Democratic candidates up and down the ballot here are ready to fight for the future of healthcare, for all of women's rights. So we need you to vote and to go out and to call every friend that you have, every friend that you have, to get out to vote and vote for the right candidates. And that would be us and the Democratic Party. Important and is more important than ever. Just look around the room today at who is here and understand the power that we have here to move our country forward. We need support from everyone coming together to recognize the importance of this moment right now in our county. Get our voices out, both like our health care and our future depends on it, because it takes all of us, a woman, a nurse, it absolutely does, to make this happen. And I want you to get out to vote, call your friends, and I think I now get the honor of introducing Josh Riley.
Union over in Delaware County did that. I'm always going to have your back because you've always had mine. Thank you, labor. Pulling up today, it was great to see a line of folks coming in to see the president. Also, a lot of law enforcement here keeping our community safe, making this event happen. Let's thank our people in uniform. So I have some questions for you all. I know that's not normally how this works. You ask me questions. I have questions for you all. Who's excited to see the president? Yeah. Right answer. All right, here's another one. Who here has voted already? Show of hands. Love that. Love that. Who here has not voted but has a plan to do so? Yeah. Okay. Is there anybody here who has not voted and has no plan to do so? Okay. All right. So you guys, my team, you guys can stand down. Normally what we do is we grab those people by the collar. We take them down to the voting location. Those of you who have not voted yet, I'm going to ask you a favor, okay? After you leave here, go early vote, please. It helps our team. We're going to spend a lot of time over the next couple of days chasing folks who haven't yet voted. If you can go vote, we don't have to chase you. Please go out and vote after you leave here today. And then another question that I have to ask you all, because this is a question I've been getting the most on the campaign trail over the last couple of weeks. Has anybody here seen the negative ads that are being run against me? Yeah. Have you seen them? Yeah. This is what happens when a super PAC comes in with a $5 million check. Everybody sees the negative ads against us. For those of you who have not seen the negative ads against us, I highly recommend them. You should check them out. They're on YouTube. If you go to the bar, you'll see them. Basically, what these ads are is like dark, grainy imagery of me. They find like the least flattering picture in the world of me. And it basically says at the beginning of it, it says, and this is not true, it says that it alleges that I want to defund the police. And the thing that's really awkward about that for me is that I come from a law enforcement family. So my mom worked in law enforcement for 20 years in Tioga County. And so these ads came out and I had to call my mom. I said, Mom, these ads are on TV, you're probably gonna see them. And look, Mom, like, I promise I love you and I'm not gonna defund you. Ads keep going on, and at the end of the ads, it basically says, in the darkest, scariest arms you could ever have, it says, Josh Riley is extreme and dangerous, which, by the way, is like a perfectly fitting commercial for Halloween time. It's really scary. We went, by the way, I'll admit this, we went in the scariest Halloween costumes. My wife, Monica, and my son, Patricio, and I went as Big Bird. Monica was Cookie Monster. Our son was the cutest Elmo in the world. Very extreme and dangerous. And so these ads are like, Josh is extreme and dangerous. So I showed it to Monica, and the first time I showed it to her, and she was like, man, that makes you sound so much cooler than you actually are. she says to me, if they only knew you the way I do, because you are such a dork. She's like, they're wasting all their money. So my wife Monica is here with us today. I want everybody to know. Monica, stand up. My team and I and all of you have been working so hard on this campaign. This is one of the closest races in the country. We have all been working so hard. If you take that effort and multiply it by 5 or 10, that's the effort Monica's been putting in. I love her for it. You all love her for it. Thank you, Monica. So I'm not the extreme and dangerous person on ads. I'd love to tell you just a little bit about my actual background. I grew up in Endicott, New York. My folks actually came here over 100 years ago by way of Calicoon. They actually stayed in Calicoon for a while and then came up to Endicott. That's right. So Sullivan County is a special place in my heart. And they went to Endicott. And I have a very typical upstate New York background. My folks came here to work in the plants. They worked in the Endicott Johnson Shoe Factory for a long time. And then the IBM plants. My folks were tanners in the shoe factory, and then worked in the IBM plants. Dad was a maintenance worker in the waste treatment plant there. And they were really, really good blue-collar jobs that could earn you a spot in the middle class, even if you didn't have a college degree. Really, you needed a really strong work ethic. And those jobs built our community. And as I was growing up, what I saw was a lot of those plants close down and a lot of those jobs get shipped overseas. And that had a real effect on our community and our economy. I remember growing up and my dad, we still argue this day whether he got my permission for this. He signed me up for a newspaper route. Because the one thing you're going to have if you grow up in upstate New York, you all know this, you're going to have a strong work ethic. And so, that's right. We may not be the fanciest folks around, but nobody's going to outwork us, right? So my dad signed me up for the newspaper route. He actually had, we have it in our campaign office, we have one of those calendars you flip over the days to count down. We're like 6 days away from the election, counting down. I'm convinced my dad, when I was growing up, had the same calendar, and it was just counting down the days till when he wasn't violating the child labor laws to sign me up for the newspaper route. I actually believe that it might actually be the case. So he signed me up for the newspaper route. I'd go out, I'd deliver the newspapers, and I would read the headlines, read the paper while I was delivering it. And I remember growing up, and you'd always have these headlines about the job losses across upstate New York. Folks who had worked for decades in the plants, had done everything anybody had ever asked of them, and then all of a sudden, the rug was pulled out from underneath them. That's what was happening to working folks here. And meanwhile, at the exact same time, on the exact same page of the newspaper, I mean, you didn't have to flip the page, you didn't have to go to a different section of the newspaper. On the exact same page of the newspaper, there were headlines about corporate profits through the roof. And Wall Street was booming. And that taught me at a young age that our political system and our economic systems are rigged against working families in upstate New York and rigged in favor of the special interests who are dominating our politics. I've tried to spend a lot of my career fighting back. My first case out of law school, a lot of my classmates went down to Wall Street to work for the banks. I decided to go to the South and do civil rights work for kids from low-income families who were having trouble getting access to healthcare services. And we're seeing this across Sullivan County today. This is the top issue, if not the top issue, one of the top issues. You know, I was working with, my clients were literally little kids, and mom and dad had 1, 2, 3, 4 minimum wage jobs, and to get their kid in to see a doctor, they had to wait weeks or months. They had to travel hours away to do it. And meanwhile, a couple zip codes over, you had families who were doing really well, could get in to see a doctor the same day down the street. I argued in federal court then, I believe in my heart and soul today, and I will argue in Congress that healthcare in this country should be a civil right, not something that's available. did. I had a after I did my that work in the South. I had an amazing opportunity to work for a federal appeals judge on the Ninth Circuit. Her name's Kim Wardlaw, brilliant jurist. And look, this is one of the things that we've been saying a lot during this campaign. I'm not really a politician. I'm a first-time person. I'm running against a career politician, and I never would have thought running for office for the first time that the experience I would have probably drawn on the most was a year that I spent in judges' chambers with my nose in a book studying the Constitution. But right now, what we are seeing with our democracy is terrifying. It is. Monica and I, our son was 6 months old when January 6th happened, and I never thought I'd have a moment where I had to question whether my son would grow up in a functioning democracy. I'm running for Congress because we need to protect our democracy, we need to strengthen our democracy, we need to restore democracy, we need to restore our faith in each other. I had, after I was able to finish my clerkship, I went to Washington, D.C. I served as counsel in the United States Senate, and one of the questions I get a lot when I tell people I'm running for Congress is they basically say, what are you, nuts? Why would anybody want to go work with Marjorie Taylor Greene? And look, it's true. I mean, there's a lot of dysfunction and division in Congress. I saw it when I was there as counsel in the Senate. Dysfunctional things like I was there actually when Ted Cruz shut the government down over Planned Parenthood funding. That was dysfunctional. Ted Cruz blocked all of the work we tried to do after Sandy Hook in the committee. Dysfunctional things like Ted Cruz filibustered constitutional amendment to Citizens Unite. Basically, anytime Ted Cruz was in the room, it was just dysfunction.
Yeah!
But here's the thing, I love how all the students got the most excited about the Ted Cruz thing. That's so great. You guys are learning right. So there was division and dysfunction, but I also saw the best of what we can accomplish if we roll up our sleeves, commit to finding common ground, treat each other with decency, get back to giving each other the benefit of the doubt. And because of that, I was able to advance legislation to protect survivors of domestic violence from homelessness and fight the opioid epidemic across the state. Finally, I was an attorney in private legal practice, and I just want to share briefly with you a case or two that I worked on. One, y'all remember the Muslim ban after Trump? Yeah, so there were so many fights to take on during the Trump administration, and my wife Monica and I decided that we were going to fight him on that. Monica's a daughter of immigrants from India and Ecuador who came to this country legally and lived the American dream, and started coming out of the Trump administration, the Muslim ban was enacted. We decided to file briefs in the U.S. Supreme Court challenging it. And then another case that I worked on was with the National Organization of Women to try to get the Equal Rights Amendment ratified into the Constitution. Took it on, but boy, with what we have seen out of the Supreme Court in recent months, it's taken on new meaning. And this is a huge contrast between my opponent and me. After the Dobbs decision came out, he has said time and time again, he has said that he thinks abortion is an issue that should be left to politicians in the states, and he is so wrong about that. By Planned Parenthood, I'm pro-choice. I believe abortion is healthcare, and women's healthcare decisions are women's healthcare decisions. Nobody else's. Contrast with my opponent and me, and we could spend all day, but I'll tell you, I mean, like, basic things. I was born in this district. He wasn't. I was raised by you in this district. He wasn't. I live in this district. He doesn't. I'll be able to vote for myself on Tuesday. He won't. I
guy can't even vote for himself. I don't know if the president's here. I was going to tell him that and see what his reaction was. But here's, let me leave you with one big contrast, and I think this is actually, this is really important. As I've been campaigning across 11 counties, I've met with so many families, and usually the first question I ask is, what's the thing that's keeping you up at night? What are you talking about at the kitchen table? And no matter what the answer to that question is, I found that you can draw a direct line from it to the corrupting influence of corporate money in our politics. Example, I met with a senior couple on a fixed income in Walton over the summer, and the wife told me with tears in her eyes, she said, you know, we had to cut back on the groceries this week because I'm diabetic, I need 5 shots of insulin, and we can't afford both. We've cut everything we can cut, and now we're cutting the groceries. And my initial reaction to that was, how is that possible in the United States of America in 2022? Had conversations with families who told me every summer, the thing we love to do every summer is take the 3-4 hour drive out to see our grandkids, and they had to cancel that this year because the price of gas was too high. That's happening because the pharmaceutical companies, the oil companies with their record profits are taking billions of dollars, they're putting it into corporate PACs, they're buying politicians, they're sending them to office, and then they're spending hundreds of millions of dollars lobbying them to keep their prices high, their profits high, even though that's bad for all of you. That couple that canceled the summer trip, that couple that was cutting back on the groceries, they don't have a corporate PAC. They don't have an army of lobbyists. All they have is their voice and their vote and their representation in Congress, and that is why I have never taken a single penny of corporate PAC money, and I never will. And I'm going to Washington to fight for you and nobody else. So I want to leave you with one thing very quickly. Aside from make sure you have a plan to vote, the next most important thing I wanted to say to all of you is thank you. When Monica and I launched this campaign 1 year ago, we had a real question about what democracy would look like in the year 2022. We are facing huge challenges. January 6th, the middle class is being eroded, our labor unions are being weakened, the planet is burning. Constitutional rights are being ripped away, and when you face that kind of adversity, the easy thing to do is to throw up your hands and cower from it and retreat from our democracy. And what I have seen instead over the last year, and particularly in the last few weeks, has given me so much inspiration and so much hope, because I'm traveling across this district and I'm seeing rooms like this of people who are coming out, standing up, fighting back, and saying, we are going to win this election, and we are going to save our democracy, and we are going to fight. It has given me so much hope and so much inspiration. And speaking of hope, I have the tremendous, tremendous honor of introducing the 42nd President of the United States, President Bill Clinton, everybody!
Josh for inviting me up here today, because I miss coming to upstate New York. When Hillary was a senator, we spent every summer up here wandering around, going every place. I love this place. I love being here. And it looks a great deal like the northern part of the state I grew up in and was governor of, Arkansas, and I just love it. Secondly, I think most of what goes on in politics today is just nuts. You know, you read, when the names people call each other, the things they say, and it doesn't make a lick of sense, and it doesn't matter if it's true or not. In the end, this is about you and your kids and your grandkids in the future. And I'm here today because I think this is really one of the most important house races in the entire United States because of who you are. And because we got to decide what to do. The Republicans are pretty simple, actually. And pretty straightforward. They say, I want you to be very miserable. And I want you to be very angry. And I want you to vote for us, and we'll make it worse, but we'll blame them. So here comes Josh saying, oh, how about we make it better? I like this guy because of what he's done with his life, and because he came from a working class family and factories on one side, law enforcement on the other. And I like what he's done with his life. He told you he worked for Judge Kim Wardlaw in California. I appointed her. And she and her husband were really good friends of mine, and she gave me one of the best gifts I ever got in my life. After I made her a judge, she said, you know, I can't be in politics anymore, and you're president, you've got everything you need, but I did think you might like this. She said, when I was 19 years old, I stayed up all night to get a good seat at an Elvis Presley concert. And I was on the front row when he threw his trademark scarf out. And he signed it. And here it is. And in my little music room, I've got Elvis Presley's scarf. That's really why I'm here for Josh. That's not true, but the point I'm trying to make is we were all still people back then. And you know, one of Clinton's rules of politics is, and I've got about a dozen of them I used to share with people all the time to try to lighten things up and also enlighten them, is if you scratch nearly anybody long enough, there's still a person down there somewhere. And the Republicans have developed a theory of making everybody feel like a victim that they think they can get to vote for. Everybody's oppressed. Nobody, it's always their fault. It's an us and them world. It may be good politics in the moment, but it's a lousy way to run a railroad. And here's the truth. We do have too much inflation. And we do have too much crime. COVID did weird things to people all over the country. But all this tough talk doesn't amount to a hill of beans that the Republicans are making. Who are the two shining stars of the Republican firmament? The governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, right? And the governor of Texas, Greg Abbott. Where the crime rate is 50% higher than it is in New York. Thank you very much. But wait, you can't think you're supposed to be mad. And then there's something else I want to say. They say, well, you got to vote for us because you always vote a protest vote in midterm and the economy's in tough shape. So you got to vote for us. That's pretty much what his opponent's saying, isn't it? So here's the problem. You don't just cast protest votes. When you vote, you're voting for something. Yeah. And thankfully, Mr. Trump was the only person ever to run for president without a platform. Literally, the Republicans they wouldn't put out a platform in 2020. They said, oh, nobody cares about that. It doesn't fit on a bumper sticker. And besides, people don't like what we do, so we got to cover it up, right? But we got one now. His opponent wants you to send him to Congress so he can help make Kevin McCarthy of California the Speaker of the House. Yeah. Now, Mr. McCarthy has been good enough to tell us what he wants to do. And I appreciate it. He said, if you vote for us, you didn't cause this inflation, but you're going to pay for it. Because here's what we're going to do. We're going to cut Social Security. We're going to cut Medicare. And we're going to repeal that awful bill that lets the government finally negotiate for lower drug prices, caps senior drug bills at $2,000 a year, and caps insulin costs at $35 a month. This is a really big deal. This bill just passed. You know how many voted for it, Republicans? Zero. Not one. And they want to get rid of it. So vote for me. I'll give you higher drug prices, weaken Medicare, weaken Social Security, but by then we'll figure out a way to blame them for it. That's really what this is about. This is not complicated. It is not rocket science. We are coming out of this. The deficit was too big. Remember, I gave you three surpluses. But it was, in fairness, it was different then. COVID collapsed the economy. Nothing could replace it but public spending. We had to get through it. But the annual deficit's going down more than $1 trillion this year. Next year, it's going down $700 billion more. It's getting better. First. Second, President Biden and the Democrats have done four big things. And we'll look and see who voted how. When they voted for the rescue plan, which was not as big as the money they spent when President Trump was in office trying to help people stay alive and find a vaccine quick. But we voted for it too, because we put America first. What did they do? Zero votes for it. You know what was in there? They're all claiming about crime now. You shouldn't be worried about crime. I think I have a little credibility on that. We had the lowest crime rate in 25 years. And lowest murder rate in 33 years. The lowest illegal gun homicide rate in 46 years. I know about this. But we did it by putting more police on the street, in the communities, knowing their neighbors, working with people, trained to use violence as a last resort. And we work with people to prevent crime. So they had lots of money for that in that recovery bill. Lots of money went to state and local governments. How much money did those guys spend supporting the police, retraining? We haven't had a major overhaul of police training in 24 years. How many people did they hire with that money? A lot of them tried to cut taxes with it. So there's one chance gone. Then there was the infrastructure bill. It's going to create 1.5 million jobs a year for a decade. Within 6 months of the bill passing, in late 2021, there were 4,300 projects underway in America. Some of them in New York. I drove past one today, right? How many Republicans voted for it? 13 in the House. 13. Why? Because they got to keep you upset. They got to keep you angry. And then they figure out how to blame us for what they did. But it passed anyway. You know what they think now? They think you'll begin to feel it and feel good about it after they win the Congress, and then they'll claim credit for it. It's amazing. Some of them even show up for ribbon cuttings for projects they voted against. And I hope you're monitoring that, all of you union members that have presence in other counties and other districts. But anyway, so we voted for it. 13 of them voted for it. Then we had a chance to do something that Josh says we ought to do. Bring some of these manufacturing jobs back home. And bring them back home. And bring them back home in a way that fights inflation. Now, this inflation has been caused by a couple of things. First, the war in Ukraine. Oh, McCarthy wants to get out of that and switch sides. I'm not kidding. He said that. I didn't. But it drove prices up. Under Biden, we're producing more oil than we were when Trump was there. The real problem here is twofold. One is price gouging, which Josh mentioned. The other is that when the refineries all have shut down during COVID, it's taken too long to get them back up. But they're coming. And when that happens, the price will go down again. Especially if we keep a sharp eye out for price gouging. And that'll happen. The other thing is that all the supply chains were broken. And we get most of our chips from China. And they still got their economy closed down. And they're wily. Because they have the government controls the economy, so they have a forced savings rate of about 40%. So they can live for 2 or 3 years, even though it looks like they're doing worse because they're not selling things. What they're trying to do is to keep us from taking our economy back. That's what the CHIPS Act does. The CHIPS Act says, let's bring that home. Let's make these computer chips here. I see some of you holding your cell phones. You couldn't have one if you didn't have a chip in it, right? Everything you have needs a chip. So we passed the CHIPS Act. This is an amazing story. Unbelievably, but smartly, the ranking Republican on the committee that had the bill testified for it. You know what happened? Kevin McCarthy jerked his chain, and he voted against it on the floor the next day. And then, when the Democrats all practically lined up to vote for it, so we had enough votes to pass it, 24 of them came along and voted for it. So 11% of their caucus voted for the CHIPS Act, and 6% of their caucus voted for the infrastructure bill. And almost all of us did. Yet their story is that we are a radical, crazy, runaway party, and only they can save America. They're running phantom Republicans against phantom Democrats. We need to stand up for real Democrats and talk about what the real Republicans in Washington are doing. This CHIPS Act will help you with inflation. For one thing, we won't have supply chain disruptions like this. For another, it'll be cheaper to get the chips into the machines that are being made in America because they're already here. It'll be faster and cheaper. It's an anti-inflation move. Then we had the Inflation Reduction Act that Mr. McCarthy's already pledged to try to repeal. How many Republicans supported that? Zero voted to give the government the power every government in the world exercises to negotiate lower prices for medicine for senior citizens, to get rid of our $2,000 a year limit on how much low-income people can pay for medicine, to get rid of the $35 a month cap on insulin. You know how many people need insulin in this country who couldn't survive without it? We have virtually an epidemic of type 2 diabetes, but it can be controlled unless we walk away. Their position is walk away. Give it to them again. That's the way they all voted. I know this is not pretty and flowery, but I'm too old to gild a lily. We've got to know what's going on here. And they said, oh, but we don't like all that climate change money. Well, in case you hadn't noticed, we're getting a lot more hurricanes. We're getting a lot more tornadoes. We're getting a lot more droughts out west. We're having a lot more floods. It's all changing. Even when I was president, the insured cost of natural disasters way back in the 90s was triple what it was in the 1980s. And I started talking about this back then, and people looked at me like I'd slipped the gasket. But I'm telling you, the good news is if you change the way you use and produce energy, you create zillions of jobs. Now, what has happened just since we passed the CHIP Act? In New York alone, in upstate New York, there have been something like $20 billion of projects announced. Oh, they want to get rid of all that. Because, you know, if people start going to work and talking to their neighbors again, reaching across the fence and across some of the party lines, we might not be so miserable. That's very bad for their political model. You have got to be miserable. And of course, it's their fault. Always them. So I'm pleading with you. Go out and talk to your neighbors. Deliver this congressional district to a superbly qualified person who's got the right positions on the issues, who cares about you, and will be fair to them instead of the way they treat them. I told somebody the other day, we were talking, I said, you know, when you reach my age, you can almost measure your life by the people you cared about who aren't around anymore. And I spend a lot of my time saying goodbye to people. A few years ago, I had the great honor, because I love music, to speak at Aretha Franklin's funeral. And I won't bore you with how we became friends, but we did. And she wasn't a perfect person, never pretended to be, and owned her mistakes and fessed up and made her life, the way most of us try to. But one of my favorite songs I actually played as I was leaving the stage when I spoke. It's a great piece of political philosophy. It says, if you want freedom, you got to think. So I'm pleading with you, go out there, do whatever you can in these last few days. Tell people not to shoot themselves in the foot. And I could go through all these issues. Crime's a problem. You know what the major contribution that the National Republicans have made to crime is? Fighting crime? They packed the Supreme Court with right-wing ideologues who voted not only to rob a woman of the right to choose, And they say, you know, this law, this Roe v. Wade is terrible because it says that the states can't do anything that imposes an undue burden on women. Who knows what that is? What's undue? I swear, I'm really quoting from Justice Alito. Undue is inherently standardless, okay? So we give them that. What have they done? They struck down New York's concealed carry law, which had the support of 80% of the people of New York, 80% of us, which means about half the Republicans. And all it says is if you want a concealed carry permit, you've got to have a reason. You know what they said? It's just too much. They didn't show one example of how it interfered with the constitutional right to hunt, to sport shoot, and to have a weapon for self-protection if you live a long way from law enforcement. Not anything. They said, we just think it's too much. In other words, whatever they want is now the law. I'm telling you, I know it's not popular to talk about democracy on the line, but it's on the line. Their candidate for governor of Arizona the other day, after she made fun of Paul and Nancy Pelosi, God, how you could do that, I don't know. One of their crazies breaks in, cracks his skull, he's 82, but I know him, he's a game good guy. He was wrestling with the guy over his hammer when the police got there. She thinks that's funny. When you're 82 and you crack your skull, you thank God if you didn't have any brain damage, but you know it's going to take a long time to heal, and you know in between now and then, bad things can happen to you. Just a bump. And she said that when she's governor of Arizona, she will not certify the electoral vote if she doesn't agree with it. God, we'd all like to live with that, don't you? I won't certify my weight if I don't agree with it. I won't certify the fact that I can't hit the ball very far anymore on the golf course because I don't agree with it. I'm telling you, folks, I want you to laugh because you can think when you're laughing. But I'm pleading with you. There is not a candidate in the entire United States that has a better claim to faithfully represent the people running to represent than your candidate.
Okay, well, that's how it went down. That's the sound that was on hand. That's the way it actually was. November 2nd, 2022. We've been listening to audio from a rally to get out the vote for congressional candidate Josh Riley running in New York's 19th district. Of course, as you heard there, former President Bill Clinton was on hand. We also heard from New York State Assemblywoman Aileen Gunther, who is seeking re-election in the 2022 election. And also Sullivan County District Attorney Megan Galligan, who's seeking a position on the New York State Supreme Court on Election Day in 2022. Interviews with all the candidates that we've spoken to on air are available at WJFFradio.org. We thank you for listening to this web-exclusive election report from Radio Catskill. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you for listening.